Blog Talk Radio.
Ten. I'm Coach Penn. Hello and welcome to Third and Long with Coach Penn. After a long off season, actually it would be in season for all the women's football teams, I am back and I am going to cover a lot of the information that has been spread around during the off season and at the end of the regular seasons for women's football. On the agenda tonight is going to be a bunch of information, so I hope everybody has got their seats locked in the relaxed recline position. And watching some replay on the NFL Network, maybe, possibly. That's always a good thing to do. You can learn a lot of stuff there. And then, you know, take in what I'm saying, because we have the IWFL and WFA to cover their seasons. Then we're going to bounce right into the NCAA, and I have a guest on the show to kind of, you know, shoot some ideas back and forth. She has some couple of nice things to say about upcoming college season. And then at the end, we're going to finish up with the NFL. I have a couple bullet points to cover there. But first, like I said, always, first and foremost, I'm Third and Long with Coach Penn, is women's football, because I've been doing it for 9 years now. I love it. I've been a head coach now for three, head coach of the California Quake. And let's send out some congratulations. The champions this year, the St. Louis Slam actually won it all for the WFA. That was a big victory over there. And I'm not sure if they're considered West Coast or not, but they are indeed champions of the first year league, WFA, Women's Football Alliance. Something cool about them, I tried getting them on the phone, but they were unable to get back to me. They will be playing at the halftime of the Rams-Green Bay game on September 27th. Now, those of you familiar with women's football, that the Seattle Majestics have done that 3 years in a row with the Seattle Seahawks, but it's always been a preseason game that they do pregame. This year, the St. Louis Slam are going to actually play at halftime. I'm not sure who they're playing yet because it hasn't been announced on their website, but September 27th, halftime of the Rams-Green Bay game, that means it's, you know, a full game, you know, because the stands will be packed. That's a pretty good thing for women's football. So congratulations to the Slam for their championship and for that great opportunity for women's football playing at halftime. The Tier 2 IWFL Championship game, which I announced with Deb Gins, live from Austin, Texas, or actually Round Rock. The Wisconsin Warriors won that game, and they beat the defending champions, Montreal Blitz. That game was a little lopsided, and I was not so much shocked as I was disappointed, because I expected something from Montreal, but after talking with their coach and realizing that it was basically a brand new team, with the exception of maybe a handful of players, that was pretty impressive to see them get back there and, you know, fight for the chance to defend their title. The Tier 1, which is the big girls, that's where all the money and power is, had a very surprising champion this year. It's because you think that the Tier 1 teams have huge budgets and large rosters. Well, guess what? One of the teams with the smallest rosters won the championship, and that was the Kansas City Tribe. And on with me right now is Megan Penrod of the Kansas City Tribe. And it's funny that I talk about size and money when Megan is one of the smallest players I have ever come across. Hello, Megan.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. Now, I got to meet you in Texas during championship weekend, before and after the game, and I will say it was a treat meeting you.
Well, thank you. It was awfully nice to meet you also.
I found out that there are a lot of people that listen to this show, so hello everybody out there listening. I would like to get some of your experiences noted on my radio show from the championship weekend. How did you enjoy yourself?
We had a great time. I was fortunate enough. I got down there a few days early because a few of us were flying down for the All-Star game regardless, so we had travel plans before we knew we were actually playing in the championship game. So I got down there a few days early and my family came down a few days early, so I had some time to kind of relax and get used to the weather and kind of take it all in. And we went down and saw the field a couple days early. The team got down. We were all waiting for the rest of the team. We all finally got back together, and we had some meetings and got down to business there for a couple days, and then we enjoyed ourselves.
Well, see, that's something I was really glad to hear that you just said. You had actually planned, already had tickets bought for Austin because you were an All-Star player, so congratulations on making the All-Star.
Thank you.
You were never ever on the field because I remember there was some little snafu with confusion about the Kansas City players being in the All-Star game, and I apologize for that because it wasn't my decision.
They said we enjoyed ourselves the night before and we weren't going to play, so...
Yeah, that wasn't my decision. So, but I had mentioned a while back to somebody, or maybe it was even on my show, about the fact that if you make the All-Star team and you are a playoff team, you might as well just buy tickets because you need to be in Austin 8 anyways, whether you make the championship game or not, because you're on the All-Star team. And I think that would have provided for a much closer All-Star game because we had no skill position players. We had 15 to 20 linemen, which was awesome. I mean, every coach dreams about that, but if you can't have any receivers to throw to or running backs to run the ball, it's kind of hard, but it was still a great experience. So more specifically about the game, what about the game? How'd you enjoy that? Because you said you adjusted to the weather down there. I don't think that's really physically possible, even if you live there.
No, it's not, and we were fortunate. Our playoff games were all... L.A. came to play us, and it was 95 degrees and 100% humidity, and so we were kind of adjusted, but I don't think anything can really prepare you for it to be 120 degrees on the field.
Right.
So we all did the best we could and tried to stay watered up, but it was certainly, I can say for myself, a struggle. I was cramping by the end of the third quarter, so never a total adjustment.
Yeah, so I was on your sideline. I saw it. You were sweating profusely just like a football player should.
Yeah.
So, what was your impression of the D.C. Divas?
I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't a little shocked by just the sheer amount of players that they brought. It's just we are always fighting travel expenses anyway, so I can't imagine how they traveled that many players, but the physical size of some of those girls was something I wasn't quite expecting either, so it was interesting to see their faces when they saw 25 of us and 45 of them.
Yeah, that was quite a big surprise, I'm sure, especially because when I saw D.C. In the hotel, I was just like, oh, my gosh, these girls are huge.
Huge,
and then
I see
you guys all over there in your dresses and makeup, and I'm like, okay, this is somewhat of a mismatch, you would think.
Yeah, we carried quite a different first impression than most teams, so.
Yeah, it was nice that you guys had a very good game plan, decided to use your speed, spread them out, and they didn't really lack on speed. It's just... They couldn't get you guys in the open field, and I was very impressed with Jenny and your receiving corps. But the thing I was most impressed with was the tackling on the defensive side of the ball. That was awesome.
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. We haven't played one team all year that was smaller than us, so our tackling has to be technical, and we have to get low and make the tackle. We don't stand a chance just going head up with most people.
Yeah, well, I would like to congratulate you because that was an awesome game. I was very proud to have been a part of the Western Conference for your championship and to be on your sideline, even if it was as a ball boy, watching you girls give it your all because, it had to be hard with only 25 of you there.
Yeah, we had most of us used to go on both ways, and we've been playing offense and defense and special teams all year, so it wasn't too much for us, but we certainly had to dig deep.
Well, congratulations. I want to thank you for being on my show.
Thank you for having me.
And don't forget, you are a champion for life, and you will be a 2009 champion until 2010 comes. What do you think about your chances for repeating next year?
I think we're bringing a lot of people back, and hopefully we've had a lot of exposure locally, so hopefully we'll get some more girls out and get people interested and be able to build off what we accomplished.
Oh,
you know?
You guys had a little thing at the Kansas City Chiefs game, didn't you?
We did. That was actually very cool.
Yes,
had us down before the game started and honored us. So it was very, very cool.
Oh, that's very awesome. Now, later in my show, I'm going to be talking about what to do during the off season, and there was something on one of those little networking sites about something that you did. Could you go into Explain that to the people out there. It's an off-color, out-of-the-box sort of fundraising event, but go ahead and explain it so people know.
It was a little different. Our general manager approached me with it, and it was actually a local celebrity eating contest. So it was myself and one of the girls off the roller derby team and some local news anchors and stuff. And it was all for charity. So it was a 10-pound brisket burger, and we had 20 minutes to eat as much as we could. And the winning person got $1,000 or got a certain amount of money for the charity of their choice. And then the person who brought the most supporters got an extra $1,000 for their charity. So I didn't win. I got 4th place out of 10. Everyone swears up and down that I was robbed. But nonetheless, I had the most supporters come out there. We had the whole team out and a bunch of our fans out. So we raised $1,000 for First Downs for Downs, which is a Down syndrome charity. So it was a lot of fun. I was miserable for about 2 days afterwards, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome to hear, and I just think it's so important that people hear that story because, I mean, it's so important for everybody out there to realize that getting women's football any kind of recognition is huge, and for you to take part in a charity fundraiser like that gets the name out there, and also because of what you were supporting, you know, Downs for Downs, is just huge, and the fact that it shows that we're not just in this for guts and glory, I guess you could say.
Right,
and,
right.
We're here to play football, make a name for women's football, and support the community.
Yep, so. It was really awesome. I felt a lot like a game. I was the smallest one up there, and everybody's cheering for me, so.
Well, that is wonderful to hear, Megan, so congratulations on being a champion, and yeah, I think you still have some more work to do to be an eating champion, but all the same, 4th place is not bad.
Not bad. I'll take it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
And thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome, and I look forward to talking with you more in the off season. Okay?
Absolutely, Coach.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, and that was Megan Penrod, number 10 of the Tier 1 World Champion KC Tribe. I'd like to thank her for being on the show. I did get in touch with St. Louis and Wisconsin. We had some scheduling difficulties to try and get all of that stuff out there. So without further ado, we'll move forward into more stuff. Let's go with the recap of the women's football season. Obviously, I've gone over, you know, who the champions were. Congratulations to those three teams. I, for one, know how much hard work goes into becoming a football team, much less a championship team. And to do those extra three games is just so time-consuming, energy-draining, and money-grappling. It's ridiculous. So I know there's so much more we can do. There were some big surprises out there, and I think the biggest one of all was the Kansas City Chiefs with their small roster. Now, a lot of people will say that the Wisconsin Warriors only had 18 healthy players. I think their roster was 19 people, but to me, Wisconsin was always a Tier 1 team. So to win the Tier 2 championship, congratulations. Buck up and next year be Tier 1 because the quality of their play was Tier 1 caliber. And, you know, they played Kansas City and they played some of the other Tier 1 teams. I think Chicago was one. And they lost, but I'm thinking if they can pull together 5-10 more people, they should definitely be a Tier 1 team because they are very good. And with Brenda Van Kuyk back there, they're always dangerous. I spoke a little bit about the All-Star game, and I was actually the All-Star head coach for the West. And that was an interesting experience. I was honored and humbled to have been voted by my colleagues, players, delegates, and other coaches to be an All-Star coach, and that was really cool. And when we got there, the two coaches that were supposed to be working with me had problems. You know, one of them got stuck in the airport, Coach Smith of the Tucson Monsoon. He got stuck at the airport and was never able to make it. And then Coach Konecki of the Chicago Force, who was the only other coach that we've been talking to for 2 weeks and, you know, trying to develop a game plan or something to do. He was really going to help me on the offensive side of the ball because there were so many Chicago Force players on the team. He had to leave before a family emergency. So I was stuck by myself to coach 40-some All-Star players. Luckily, the Wisconsin Warriors head coach and assistant coach, Coach Mack, Coach Killian. They came out there and they helped me during the game, and we went up 12-0 real quick, and then the other team, the East, led by Lisa Horton, and I think it was Jennifer King, the wide receiver from Carolina Phoenix, they just put on an aerial assault that we could not stop. We didn't have any DBs, or the DBs that we had were playing out of position, and it was just skill versus size, and we invoked our size at the beginning of the game, but we couldn't keep up with them in that heat long enough. I mean, most of our girls were tired. We had at least three or four players tap out. It was just so hot. Our game started at 10 a.m., but the game itself was, it's exactly what you want women's football to look like in the near future, because there were talents at every position. I mean, I could not believe just at practice when we were practicing kickoff, just to make sure everybody was on the same page about kickoff. You know, I was standing back returning the kicks just to get everybody to stay in their lanes, and I was like in awe of seeing how fast everybody was coming down there and how precise it was. It was so nice, and I look forward to the day where every team can have that on their own team, just everybody barreling down the field after somebody. So that's just phenomenal, and I had a great time. It was really hot. It was very challenging. I do think there should be some changes to the way it's organized and or run, and I've expressed those opinions with league, but I think it was a great experience, and I think that being an all-star is wonderful, but being able to play in an all-star game is absolutely ridiculously mandatory. It should be. I know it's a lot to put on and there's extra costs involved, but we need to do our part as people who love the sport to promote it and get that money flowing in so that this is something that the ladies can be rewarded with, because the All-Star Game is an extraordinary event. And now that the season's over, it's technically the off-season. So what do we do for women's football? What do we do in the off-season? With the California Quake, we actually started 3 weeks ago. Tonight will be week four. Oh, yeah, let me mention that. Third and Long this week is going to be pre-recorded, so you can't call in. The guests that I have on will already be lined up, and they're adjusting their schedules to be on my show during the day because I had to pre-record, because on Wednesday nights I actually have football. And I'm not coaching youth football. I'm not coaching men's football. I'm actually still coaching women's football. A lot of the players want some off-season work, work/knowledge, I would say. And so I started an offensive classroom clinic, 6 weeks of offensive football. Last 3 weeks we've done an hour or so of field work where people have learned to give and receive handoffs, throw short passes, run routes, catch the ball, and little intricacies that you really don't have time for, you know, at practice, because, you know, most teams only practice 2 days a week. The very few practice 3 days a week, and then on Saturdays during the preseason, and, you know, you can only cover so much. So I threw myself out there and gave my players the opportunity to learn some more stuff, you know, and we've had a pretty good turnout. You know, the first night I think we had 15 people, a couple rookies. You know, we have I think four more rookies showing up tonight that are interested in learning about football, and it's a great recruiting tool, and it keeps your women in an environment around football where they, you know, you can kind of regulate them keeping in shape. But that's just one of the things you do. You know, I know that some teams have already started tryouts, and I'm not so sure I agree with that, but hey. And then, of course, you have the Women's Football Board with the Women's Football Camp coming up. And, you know, I haven't really researched much into that because of my feelings on it. And for those of you who want to know my feelings on it, you can listen to one of my previous episodes. I'm in the process of hoping to create a women's football camp, not so much for everybody, but for joining in with the teams that are around here and doing some football clinics and or camps free of charge, you know, basically sponsored by the teams that are local. We're trying to do that. I know that I'm trying to partner up with the SoCal Breakers and Los Angeles Amazon, since I know both their coaches and both their management. about, you know, round robin some sort of clinic, you know, where, you know, each team hosts a football clinic, and, you know, we just get the word out there, because I think it's very important that all these teams work together to spread the word about women's football. So during the off season, you know, I think it's very important to, you know, keep in touch with your players, fundraise, recruit, definitely get the word out there and fundraise, because, I mean, during the season you have minimal time to fundraise. You really should be concentrating on football and making sure the quality of the product you put on the field is worth somebody sponsoring. So off season should be getting the name out there, doing as much fundraising as possible. As for tryouts, I know that some teams are having tryouts or have already had tryouts, like Modesto, I know, already had theirs. I'm not so sure why they already had theirs, but, I mean, they had a huge roster last year, so I'm not going to knock it. They keep building that roster. They get more experience. They are going to be a team to be reckoned with. I mean, they're going to get better. I know that some teams that have teams very close in proximity to them try and beat a team to the punch. My good friend Coach Duncan actually told me as much. He's having tryouts, I think in September. He was joking around with me. He's like, I got to have these tryouts before you have yours, otherwise you're going to take all the players. And I'm like, I don't know where he gets that stuff from. So I think players should try out for as many teams as they can, you know, find out what's the best fit for them. You never know. I mean, it's every team operates differently, and I mean, I got to hang out with some of the Amazon players at the All-Star game, and it was good to hang out with some of these players, because, you know, we're such heated rivals, and we've only played 4 games in the entire life of both teams. So I think it's pretty cool that we were able to bond and become friends. You know, it was pretty nice to hang out with everybody out there, and I think that's important to keep that thing up there, because, you know, everybody's in this for the same reason. That's to further the sport, take some of the limelight away from the men, or not take it away, but share it, you know, because football's a huge sport. It's the most popular sport in the United States. So tryouts, you know, I personally don't think tryouts. I think tryouts are the beginning of your season. I don't think they should be held this early. I understand why some people do it, but I would never do it unless I had to. If we were getting paid and this was a year-round thing, I could understand that, you know, have a tryout a month, you know, have it, make it more of a workout to bring more recruits in there. But my tryouts are very formatted, and they take 2 to 3 hours, and it's, you know, something that we will work with when we get there. I know we're having tryouts in November, December, and January this year. And, you know, if we lose a couple of recruits to some of the other local teams because we're not having ours till later, that's understood. But, you know, I think those tryouts should signify the start of your season. And, you know, I won't be too stressed about it. I would think that with the WFA season and the IWFL season, that women's football is definitely moving forward. I mean, this was a great year. I saw some good football being played in both leagues. I haven't heard of anything really too much changing in the IWFL right now. I haven't heard of any teams leaving. I haven't heard about any teams joining. I haven't heard about any teams folding. So I'm not sure if the league's keeping all that stuff quiet. They've been pretty good about putting up some posts. You know, USA Football, you see that all over the NFL right now. And guess what? We've been partnered, or the IWFL has been partnered with them for over a year. And now you see all the stuff with the NFL. So I think the IWFL is pretty good with that. The WFA, on the other hand, first-year league, I consider their first year to be quite successful. But they did have a lot of teams just all of a sudden exit. Whether they're kicked out, changed names, or just left in general, I'm not really sure because I'm not in the loop on that. But if you check the Women's Football Talk boards, you can find out tons of information about that stuff. But I would be very wary of, you know, a league that the league owner shows up at a game and just takes the money from the gate and then disbands the team. I was kind of surprised I didn't hear that discussed during the interview that the ladies at WFB Talk had with Mr. King, but I know a bunch of people that are at that game, and they called me the next day and are like, "Are you kidding me? Did you hear what happened?" And you know, Coach Bartley and I have never been, I would say, the bestest of friends, but we have mutual respect for each other in the women's football. And what was done to him, I think, was very unprofessional. And I would question anybody who joins that league knowing what happened there. And for anybody that needs to know, you can always contact the source of information, you know. Contact the two people. Coach Bartley and Mr. King, they had some issues, and I don't think they were resolved the right way, especially when it's done so publicly in the middle of a game. I thought that was very poor, the way that was handled. I mean, I don't care what the issue was. That should never happen. Nothing should ever affect the game on the field. Leave it to way after it. So with that said, I mean, I'm done discussing women's football. I mean, we'll talk some more in the next couple weeks. I plan to do my show every other week from here on out until the end of the NFL season, or until women's football really gets into the thick of things and I'm not just unable to do it. So we're hopefully thinking, you know, at least till around Christmas time, we'll be able to get a bunch of people on the show, some coaches and some players, and talk about everything that's going on in the off season. Right now, I'm going to have to put you on hold and then see if I can get my NCAA guest on the phone. So if everybody will just hold on 1 second, I will be right back. And I'm back. Once again, you're on Third Along with Coach Penn, and I've just discussed all again about women's football, and we're going to move right into the NCAA. My favorite type of football is college football. And there's lots of college football getting ready to start tomorrow, Thursday, September 3rd. I'm very excited about the college football season, and I hope you are too. Let's see what we have. On the phone with us right now is otherwise known as Spider. I'm just going to leave it as Spider. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
All right, Spider, she's another college football enthusiast, and she's going to be discussing with me or throwing in her two cents where she sees fit about the NCAA, and I'm only going to cover this first week in a couple snippets, so let me just bounce right into that. As everybody knows who listened last year, I don't do preseason rankings. I think that, you know, rankings based on last year when it's a completely different team is a little bit stupid. I understand the purpose, tradition, and they'll always be there. I just don't agree with it, and my rankings will come out the first week of October after we've seen 4 weeks of football. You know, and then I'll base my decisions off of what I've seen from each quality team out there. And as for the rankings, why don't they just crown Florida already? I mean, every media guide and outlet that I have read, you know, the Florida Gators have, you know, their entire team coming back, and they have an easy schedule. And the only test they're going to face is when they play LSU and Alabama in the championship game. So all these experts or, you know, people out there who follow college football are just, they're already crowning them. They're saying they're going to be playing in the BCS Bowl against Texas or Oklahoma. And while that's not very far-fetched, I think people should let the game be played. How about you, Spider?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
You missed that? I was talking about, you know, just crown Florida already.
How do I feel about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's a little premature.
Well, have you haven't had a chance to look over Florida's schedule and see what they face this year?
I haven't looked at their schedule, no.
Okay, yeah. Well, either have I. All I know is their non-conference schedule, out of everybody on there, the only team they play is Florida State. And Florida State, wow, is my team, I think, is still rebuilding and is a year or two away from being the Florida State to reckon with the top-tier quality teams. I just think it's a little ridiculous that, I mean, everybody's all over Florida's jock, as you would say. The second thing I had to discuss, Notre Dame's schedule. Beano Cook and Lou Holtz have basically said Notre Dame's going to play for the BCS championship against Florida. Because of their schedule being so easy. You know, the only team that they're saying they face that they will lose to is USC. And I'm looking at Notre Dame's schedule, and Notre Dame plays Nevada this Saturday. And I already have that marked as a loss. I think Nevada's going to give them a run for their money. And, I mean, Michigan and Michigan State, Notre Dame has always been, to me, one of the most overrated teams in all of college football. I just don't get it at all. But, I mean, they play Pitt at Pittsburgh. They play USC at home. Washington's going to be much improved this year with a new head coach. Michigan should be a totally different team this year, and Michigan State's always something, you know, to be reckoned with. So, I mean, there's four or five teams that could just beat them. And I think it's a little early to say they have an easy schedule with USC being the only challenge they have. You know, speaking of USC, my next show will be after they've already played Ohio State. So we'll know a little bit more about them and their starting freshman quarterback later. What do you think about Notre Dame over there and their schedule?
Well, from what I saw last season, I don't think Notre Dame will only lose one game. I think they'll lose.
And I would agree with you. I mean, they did dismantle Hawaii in Hawaii, which is hard to do, but I mean, and they have a very good quarterback. He makes a lot of mistakes, but they have two great receivers. But until they get a running game and a defense, they're not a team to me at all. You know, I expect them to get very exposed against Nevada and then Colin Kaepernick because he is very mobile. Let's see. What's up?
Maybe next year, but not this year.
Next year? Well, do you think if Weiss loses three or four games, do you think he'll be around next year?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Maybe he'll be shipped to Michigan.
He'll be shipped to Michigan. There you go. And Rich Rodriguez is on his way out. He keeps on getting in trouble for stupid stuff. I don't care how much you cry on TV. Now, the Big 12. You're the Big 12 person. I'm the ACC person. You mentioned something to me earlier in the week that the Big 12 has a very interesting season ahead. Now, before I just let you go ahead and ramble, let it be noted that there are three Big 12 West teams they go north and south, don't they? It's the Big 12 North and South divisions, right? Not East and West.
Yeah, I believe it's North and South.
Okay. Well, I believe it's the South. The South has three teams ranked. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Texas all ranked in the top 10 in the preseason. Now, I don't give much to Big 12 or preseason rankings, but Oklahoma plays BYU this weekend. And then Oklahoma State plays Georgia. So we'll learn right away if those rankings are worthy or not. So you're the Big 12 guru.
I'm not a guru.
Well, I would think you know a little bit more about the Big 12 or have a little bit more of an opinion about the Big 12 than I would.
I don't know.
Well, you're a Texas person, first and foremost, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what do you think? A lot of people are predicting Florida and Texas in there. What do you think about Texas' chances this year? And she's dropped. Of course. She was on her cell phone. I was calling her in, so she's dropped. I guess we won't be finding out her opinions on that. But my opinion on the Texas football season, I think they have a very good chance. I think they play a very hard schedule, and if they can get through it with 0-1 loss, they should have a very good chance. I think they are going to be a very good team. Colt McCoy's back. They have a lot of good talent back. The big game you got to circle is the Oklahoma Texas Red River rivalry. I can't remember what it's. They've changed it over the past couple of years, and I think it was the shootout. Now it's the rivalry when it's now more of a shootout as opposed to on the scoreboard. So this week's schedule has a bunch of games out there, and remember it starts tomorrow, Thursday, September 3rd. Two games on TV that you need to know about: South Carolina, NC State. Now, here's the thing that boggles me. NC State is a 4-point favorite, and it lost to South Carolina last year 34-0. 34-0 it lost. And yet it's a 4-point favorite this year? I mean, NC State has some major expectations this year, but I mean, South Carolina is a good team. Steve Spurrier is nothing to be messed with. I think the game is going to be a close game, but I don't know about that right there. I would tend to think that South Carolina would be the favorite, but it's not. So it'll be an exciting one, and that's the way to start off college football right there with an intriguing matchup. But that's not all. Thursday night has another big build game. Oregon at Boise State. The blue turf Smurfs hit it against the green and yellow Ducks. So last year, Boise State went to Oregon and upset them 37-32. This year, they play in Boise State, and Boise State's like something in two, like 40-something in two or 50-something in two the last several years or seasons at the blue turf. So Boise State should have the advantage in a Thursday night game, number 14 versus number 16, is a fantastic way to start off the season. Now, Saturday, I have about six games marked as stuff you got to watch. Starting off the day, of course, you got Oklahoma State and Georgia. That's the Big 12 versus the SEC. Are we going to decide which conference is better the first week of the season? No, but it should give us a pretty good, I would say, guesstimator to let us know. Then we have Notre Dame and Nevada. Now, you can say what you want about, you know, Notre Dame, like them, love them, hate them, leave them, whatever. I think Nevada is a very good team. Pistol offense with Colin Kaepernick and those three running backs that they have. It's really going to test Notre Dame's defense because Notre Dame's defense is, I would say, is their weakest point. Their second weakest point is their rushing attack. I mean, they should be a throw-first team because they have those two great receivers and Jimmy Clausen can throw the ball like nobody's business. But if Nevada can cover them or get a couple stops and stay close to this game, look for the upset. That's my upset special right there, Nevada over Notre Dame. Next game I have is an afternoon game or early evening game for you folks on the East Coast, BYU and Oklahoma. Oklahoma lost a lot of people from last year's team. Yes, Sam Bradford came back. Yes, DeMarco Murray, the injury-ridden running back, is back. But the offensive line is gone. They lost a couple of people on defense. And Max Hall can throw the ball like nobody's business. So that will be an interesting game. And if it's close by any means, look for Oklahoma to have a rough season. Then the next game I have is going to be Washington at LSU. Or I'm not sure. Is it at LSU? Yes. At LSU? Oh, no, I'm not even sure now. Okay. Well, Washington and LSU play each other. And the reason I say this is a big game, Washington was 0-12 last year. They've lost a junkload of games in a row, but it's interesting for the fact that they have a new head coach, new mentality, new system, and we'll see if Jake Locklear can actually become a quarterback under a quarterback's coach, Steve Sarkisian. LSU got a new defensive coordinator, and after their horrible defensive performance last year, we're actually wondering which defense is going to show up. And if they can contain Jake Locklear, I expect this to be a blowout. But if Washington is a newly revamped team, we may see something and have them earn a little respect out there. Next game, I think, is interesting, at least to me, is California at Maryland. A lot of people are picking Cal to upset USC this year in the Pac-10. Not so sure if they're ready to be unseated yet. Cal does have a very good team, and Javon Best is somebody that won't even come close to winning the Heisman. That's probably one of the best people in college football. I'm sorry. Quarterbacks are not the best athletes. Colt McCoy is a very good athlete. Tim Tebow is a very good athlete. Sam Bradford, not so much. Pocket passing quarterbacks, I mean, to win the Heisman Trophy, you're supposed to be the best player on the field. And that's player, not the best leader on the field, so whatever. But California and Maryland. Last year, Maryland beat California 35-27, and the game wasn't even close. I mean, yes, that's 8 points, but, I mean, Maryland was up by, like, four touchdowns at one point. And California came back and made it a little respectable. That game's intriguing to me. It may not be to you, but I think it's something out there from a revenge factor. Watch California just trip the light board and watch it get bright out there. Last game that is a must-see, it's the 8 p.m. game. I'm sure it's going to be on some major network. Alabama and Virginia Tech in Atlanta. The ATL is going to be going crazy with another SEC-ACC huge two-ranked opening teams. Last year, Alabama said, slap, slap, to Clemson, and Clemson said, bye-bye, we're not going to play football the rest of the year. Ended up losing their head coach and just overall playing poorly all year. Now, Virginia Tech has high aspirations, but the loss of their starting running back for the season, Darren Evans, puts all the pressure on Tyrod Taylor, and who knows if Tyrod Taylor can actually do this. I've never been that impressed with him. So, I think the defense of Virginia Tech is going to win this game if Virginia Tech's going to win it. I don't see the offense doing it. It's going to be a low-scoring event. If anybody scores three touchdowns, it's going to be Alabama, and that means they're going to win. I don't see Virginia Tech, you know, being an offensive juggernaut after years and years of being just defense and sliding by. The only year they've ever had a very good offensive team was when Michael Vick was at the helm. And he's not there anymore. Now he's a backup quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. Come on, y'all. But guess what? Saturday is not it for football. Monday, there's two more big games on Monday. There's the Cincinnati at Rutgers. Cincinnati won the Big East last year. Rutgers beat them lost last year 10-13. So this year they go to Rutgers, and Rutgers gets to put themselves on the map. Now, no Big East team was ranked in any of the polls for the preseason. So Big East is not only not getting any respect, they now have to prove it with the two technically best teams out there the first week of the season. One of these teams is basically going to be nixed from the race. I expect a very good game. You know, Rutgers always has a great, great defense. Unfortunately, they lost their best receiver and their starting quarterback from last year, so they better hope their defense can score, too. And the final game is my kicker. Miami and FSU, Labor Day game again. I hate these games on Labor Day because it ruins a season for either one of the teams. You know, I hate Miami just as much as any Florida State fan, but come on. The first, let them both get good first and then ruins one's dreams in the middle of the year, not the first game of the season. I mean, especially for Miami, look at their schedule to start off the season. They could very possibly start off 0-4, and I'm not talking about because they suck. I'm talking because they play four really, really good teams. And everybody, like Kirk Street and a couple other bloggers out there, said Miami could beat FSU. And I think they're saying that because they don't want to say that Miami will start 0-4. Because if Miami loses to FSU, which I see happening, they will start 0-4 because I do not think they'll beat Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, or Oklahoma. I would love for them to beat Oklahoma and Georgia Tech. Virginia Tech, I don't really care about because I know that Florida State can beat Virginia Tech whenever they want. But, I mean, that's the big game on Monday night, another ESPN Labor Day, and I think it's still the highest-rated one ever for a football game, college football game on a cable network. It was Miami and FSU a couple Labor Days ago. Even though the game was horrible, it was the most watched, and I think it still is. So I think college football season is here, and I'm very happy. I can't wait to get into the games. I've already got my ESPN game plan ordered. I got to switch some other channels around. I got my 3 TV set up. I'm ready for all of that stuff to kick in on Saturday. And while the first week is usually pretty dead, there's only a couple games. This week we're rewarded with a bunch of games. I'm not so sure about week two. I'll be discussing through week three in a couple weeks, when I have my show again. But let's say that's that for college football. I'm just welcome back, college football. I love you so much. You're the other love of my life. You know, the first love of my life. You know who you are. So let's get out there for the NFL. The NFL. Everybody that's listened to my show knows that I'm not a big NFL person for the fact that everybody's a carbon copy of each other. Last year, there was a wrinkle thrown into it. The Dolphins, my team, the Dolphins, it had to be my team. I don't know when I was. Became the surprise team of the year. Ended up winning the AFC East over the highly favored New England Patriots, who managed to tie them at 11-5, but lose the tiebreaker because of the score difference, because Miami unveiled the Wildcat offense in like week three and just beat the crap out of New England. And New England took them to the woodshed in the rematch, but it wasn't by enough points, and Miami won the tiebreaker. So congratulations to that. And they were the surprise team. They went from 1-15 to 11-5 in a playoff team. That was amazing. Who is going to be the surprise team this year? Is it going to be the Detroit Lions? No, because the only surprise would be them winning four games. Matthew Stafford looks like he's going to be starting quarterback. Dante Culpepper tripped and broke something. I don't know. I just heard about that today. I was like, are you kidding me? I think they had a better chance with Dante Culpepper. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think, you know, throwing any quarterback there the first year, unless it's absolutely necessary, is just stupid. I mean, Joe Flacco pulled it off, Matt Ryan pulled it off, but they had great talent surrounding them on one side of the ball or the other. Joe Flacco on defense, the Ravens defense is always very good. And then, you know, Matt Ryan had all these weapons in Atlanta. Just give the ball to Michael Turner and watch him burn. I mean, Turner the burner. This year, you know, you got Brady Quinn trying to fight for a job. Matt Leinart is regulated to almost third string now. And, you know, all these quarterbacks that have been waiting for their shots still haven't got it. So I just think it's interesting that, you know, everybody's in such a rush to find the next Ben Roethlisberger, get him out there and win a Super Bowl in the second season. Not going to happen. So, you know, shoot me an email, headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. Let me know about who you think is going to be the surprise team in 09. Are the Vikings the new surprise team with Brett Favre back there? I mean, Brett Favre and Adrian Peterson in the backfield. Whew, you saw what he did to the who was that? Who were they playing the other night? Oh, crap, I forget who they were playing. But the 75 yards, was it the Cardinals? 75 yards on the first play of scrimmage? Oh, man, that was just amazing. And can't wait for that Packers-Viking game. That's going to be insane. What team is going to continue to disappoint? You know, the Rams, the Lions. You know, when are these teams ever going to start winning again? Or ever, you know, for the case of the Lions. You know, and who's going to underperform? You know, there's a lot of teams out there with a lot of great talent, but always seem to underperform, like North Turner's Chargers. North Turner should always be a coordinator, never head coach, because he's just horrible at a head coach. I mean, they have way too much talent on the Chargers for them to not be not only in the playoffs, but for contending for the championship. I don't know. I mean, how many times does a coach have to be a failure? I think the Cowboys are going to underachieve again, mainly because I think Wade Phillips is overrated. I think he's a good coach, but I don't think he deserves he needs to be on a team that is mediocre and keeps him at mediocre and doesn't let him slip down. He doesn't need to be on a team that has lots of potential and he keeps mediocre, because that seems to me where all his teams go. Let's see. We got I hope the Dolphins have a good year. I don't think they'll catch anybody by surprise with a Wildcat, even though they have Pat White this year where they can add more of a throw to it. I don't see them winning division as much as I would like them to. I think the Patriots are back with Tom Brady, and it's going to be another one of those years where the Patriots are I just can't even say the Patriots without feeling nauseous. So, you know, that's my take on those things in the NFL. Everybody knows why I'm interested in the NFL, because of fantasy. Fantasy football is the best thing out there. Keeps you interested for the things that are just boring as hell. Because everybody wants to see exciting football, and that's something the Dolphins did. They not only won games because of the Wildcat, they added some exciting football in there. People were just like, oh, man, they're adding college stuff to the NFL. It's fun. It's not the same exact play that the two games before everybody ran, you know. They did something different, and though some other teams are doing some things to add a little bit more flavor to their offense and defensive playbooks, you know, still people watch and get into the game so much because they have either one, have just an infatuation with their team that's totally unnecessary and ridiculous, and two, because they play fantasy football and they want their players to get their stats so they can win their league, whether it's money or pride. Let me know who your fantasy players are, who you expect to bust out, because 1 week of the season will have passed when I do my next show, and we'll be checking in on the Madden curse. Everybody that's familiar with the Madden curse, whoever's on the cover of the Madden game, the video game, seems to get injured or have something bad happen to them. Going all the way back to Eddie George, Dante Culpepper, Michael Vick, who else was on there? Tons of people have gotten hurt or have, you know, caused some sort of commotion. Brett Favre, you know, the Madden cover is something you really don't ever want to be on. So this year, what do? They put two players on there from the Super Bowl, Polamalu and Fitzgerald. Now, I'm hoping nothing happens to Fitzgerald because he's one of my favorite fantasy players. I've had him like 3 years running, and he always does great for me. But Polamalu is a huge part of that defense, and I'm wondering if Madden was like, let's put two players on there, and that'll lessen the chances that there'll be a Madden curse, because even if one of them gets hurt, the other one's still fine. So I just think it's funny, and I thought I'd end the NFL on a funny note, the Madden curse for two people. I know my girl will be pissed if Polamalu, because she's a Steelers fan, and she's now saying she's from Pittsburgh instead of Pittsburgh because they got six trophies over there now, and she rubs it in all her Dallas Cowboy friends, and that's always fun to deal with. But that is all I had for today. I planned to do a much longer show, but I couldn't get those other couple guests on because of the schedule confrontation or schedule rearrangements. We just couldn't get it all on the same page. So I had planned to do a much longer show, but that's all I had for today. I'm back. I'll probably have a little bit more organized show in 2 weeks. And once again, we're going to go every other week for right now. Then if the next couple, or I think the next one will still be taped, and then we'll start going live towards the beginning of October, where I'll try and have some call-ins and we can all discuss what's going on. Remember, my first preseason ranking will come out in October for college football. In the meantime, you can always hit me up at headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. We can shoot some ideas on how to fundraise, how to recruit, how to get your name out there a little bit better in the marketing world so that women's football can succeed. Because remember, first and foremost, I am out here for women's football. That's why the show is called Third and Long, because this is the third iteration of football, and we have a long way to go if we wanted to make it to the next level. We've got to keep working hard, keep getting everything out there, and hopefully, you know, we will succeed. I mean, I've been involved in three or four championship games now as a spectator and or announcer or volunteer, and they keep on looking better and better. Last year's one in Chicago was great because it was filled with people there, and then mainly because Chicago was the home team, and they made it to the championship game. Well, this year there wasn't as many people, but it was the facility was fantastic. I mean, we had a Jumbotron and a replay board. That's awesome. And for those of you who have actually looked on the Women's Football Talk board, they have highlights of all that stuff. I'm not sure why they have the actual highlights from the video board instead of just the video feed. That's kind of confusing to me, but it was really cool to be involved in the championship weekend and how they made an event out of it. I think there's some tweaking, like I mentioned before, that needs to be done, but it was a great first-time event that needs to be done every year. I think it's a grand opportunity. Congratulations to the championship teams and everybody that survived the season. I know that we had several players, probably dozens of players that were injured and weren't able to finish the season. So congratulations to all those players that finished the season healthy, heal up. For all those players that have their seasons cut short by injuries and or other issues, you know, enjoy your offseason, stay in shape, call your coach, find out what you can be doing to improve or what you need to improve on, and how about you may go about improving, or, you know, ideas for what other positions I can play. All that stuff helps. You know, the coach then knows you're interested. All the owners and managers and coaches out there, keep working with your teams. Know that, you know, if you really want to be a champion, there is no off season. You got to keep working. And I know time is limited with it spaced out between everything that we do. But, you know, if you really love it, you'll make the sacrifices in your sleep or other areas to get done what needs to be done. I'm Coach Penn. These are all my opinions, my 2 cents worth. And I just want to say thank you for everybody that's listening. I'm glad to be back, and we'll talk more in 2 weeks. For now, that is all.